Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. What's up with it? Attention sack artists. You trying to get your music played? R&B, jazz, hip-hop, and comedy. Spoken word as well. Send your MP3 tracks to DJ1Gone at yahoo.com. That's DJONEGONE at yahoo.com. Make sure you give a call to 347-205-9722 or log on to blogtalkradio.com.
From windy Sacramento, we had a good rain last night, man. I hope y'all are floating. But man, dude, it's cold. So it is the wise person. The wind, you can hear the wind in the background. DJ and Lamont Myers Foundation's breakfast fundraiser here at 9242 Keeper Boulevard. And so, man, if you haven't had breakfast, come and support this group now. This group was supposed to come speak at our fentanyl awareness listlessness. So she was all choked up and she couldn't even make it out. She told me today, but I ain't choked up and I'm out here supporting them. Support is everything, my people. And with that being said, I'm going to pass the mic to the most.
Yeah, I'm here.
Grand Rising Kings and Queens.
Yeah, I thought you was out there on the boat for a minute. I was about to get mad.
Hey, so I don't see where Marvell and them is online on my phone right now, so let me switch some things up, Mark. How was your weekend, brother?
Well, weekend was good, man. You know, I went and gave God some praise yesterday, you know, lifted him up, keeping him on high. You know, that's the first thing in my mind every morning. So got to keep God first. And that'll keep them demons aside. You know, got to strengthen up, hone up that, sharpen up that sword so we can cut these demons out of some of these people, man.
So I have Mr. Marvell Wilson on the line. Marvell?
Yeah, good morning. I was on hearing you, and you sound. I hope I could have shared with you that it sounded the wind was kind of interfering. I couldn't hear clearly. Then all of a sudden, the lady said, "Welcome to Block Talk Radio. Goodbye." And I'm thinking, "Dang, that was the quickest 2 hours I ever had." And I didn't even get to say nothing. So yeah, good morning, y'all, and good morning to our contributors, our faithful contributors, and to our listening audience across the globe. Good morning to you.
Yes, sir. So I am at the Lamont Myers Foundation. I won't be on air today again. I've always got something pressing, right? But I want you to know I'll be watching the phone line for those that call in. And so, again, if you haven't had breakfast, this event lasts until 2 o'clock. From 9 to 2, and so we'd like to get you all out to be a part of the Lamont Myers breakfast fundraiser here in Elk Grove. I see Double R in the car. Double R, go ahead on and say hello to the rest of the people, man.
Hey, what's up, Black family? Double R, top of the top with you, man. Double R in the car, man, ready to roll. Seatbelt on, buckle up, everybody. Let's roll.
So today... Today we have a topic of violence, gun violence versus gang violence. And what's the difference? Because just this last week, again, I had three murders that I was called out to. I didn't make not one of them. One was 4 a.m. in the morning. The other one was 1 a.m. in the morning. And the next one was in the nighttime. But they was all on the north side. And so... my co-host from 97.5 KDEE went out to these shootings for the organization to support the families. So it is where it is getting out of hand out there, where a young lady lost her life off of in Green Haven area, and she's an innocent bystander. So I'm trying to figure. My question is, gun violence versus gang violence, and what's the difference if there's one? That'll be the topic I'll start with, but I'll be off the air because I got to turn this music back on. Peace. Brother Marvell or Brother Mark or Brother R&R or Double R, I see that
here.
We have Reb on, so I'm gone.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, I thought you'd go play as a little tune or something first, but okay, we got you.
Oh, yeah, I'll play some music.
Right on. So, gun violence versus, that's a unique way of putting it, versus gang violence. And the first thing that comes to my mind is gun violence, for the most part, is a really great foundation in this country. Because if it weren't for that gun, a lot of stuff wouldn't have taken place. So gun violence is sort of like a mainstay. And it's a control mechanism for the most part. When I think on the broad scale, it's just that Second Amendment that folks tout so easily to justify everyone having a weapon, not everyone, because what happened for a long time is that when you get convicted for a felony, you cannot legally own a gun. And our population, one out of three of our members in our population were found to be convicted conveniently for felonies, disallowing us to have guns, and then in some lot of states disallowing us to be able to vote. So, you know, it's not a widespread practice for every American to be urged to have a gun. A select group who are rooted in the idea that if everything else goes wrong, then we could take over. And that kind of gun violence, and what it has trickled into is it's a strange phenomenon where gun holders and the type of guns that they have lent to mass shootings. Gun violence to the most heinous and mindless and insane degree, because whatever motivated one to pick up the gun, that was enough to take the lives of people they didn't even know. So gun violence is a very, like, it's a staple here. Gang violence, to me, is one of those anger-driven issues. It's anger-ridden, and it creates a competition and a territorial kind of mindset that is to me is as insane now as the gun that was used to take this country and to control this country was then. It's insane. So the difference I see, it's not as obvious, but when I look closer, I see the difference being that the people who are in gangs and have a tendency to pick up guns while in the gang, their illness is different than the illness of those who maintain the Second Amendment and the gun so they can keep control and take over other people's property and countries. The difference between gang violence and gun violence starts ringing a little clearer to me. But I'm gonna defer to the floor to get some more ideas on it, because it's none of it makes sense. So we're really attempting to make sense out of nonsense, and maybe we might have some success. So I'm going to yield to the floor and get some other perspectives about this.
Yeah, well, it's like you said, the gun violence started the gang violence. That's how they ruled the world, pretty much, with gun violence. Everywhere they went, they utilized the weapons of mass destruction, or weapons of slow destruction at first. You know, while we were fighting with our hands and what we could make with our hands, they devised a method of making something that could cause you not to use your hands. You know, stop you real quick, stop you dead in your tracks type of method. And that's how they accumulated all of the wealth that they have, which they got it off the backs of others, you know, from going into indigenous lands and just taking all the goods and stuff, you know, taking all their resources and not giving anything back, which caused them to have the power that they have today. And I mean, they did it to us and others as well. And that caused us to develop gang violence, which is no threat to them because we only threaten ourselves with this gang violence. Like I say, our gangs, these kids have gotten these guns in their hands and they think they're something, like you said about the young man, the young kid. It's a way of getting respect. He can make people respect him. He get a body, he get respect, they won't mess with him. No, somebody's going to shoot him. And I don't see it stopping no way soon unless we can get a number of us conscious men together and walk these neighborhoods and recreate. We can't create a fear to them because they're shooters, but recreate a type of love that they will have learned to have a need for one another. That's what we got to create in these neighborhoods, cause them to develop a want and a need and to care for one another, to let them know that their lives matter just as well as our lives matter. So we have our work cut out for us, and I'm not giving up on them because they are our future. I digress.
Can I say something? Am I heard?
Yes, Ray. Of course.
Yes, sir. Okay, let's go way back before we even thought of, right? Cain and Abel, a rock, killed them. David and Goliath, a rock, killed them. If we only had a rock today, the world would be chaotic. The world would be overly populated. God's plans is always in the midst of everything. I mean, we want to fight everything. We want world peace. I do. I want love. I do. But if that's not part of God's plan, just like Job had to figure out his plans once all this stuff started happening to him. We can't stop everything that we want to. I don't believe in guns. I don't carry no weapons. I don't deny people that have the right to bear arms as they have it as law now. All people I know pretty much have guns. Back in the 60s, the 50s, before most of us was born, they didn't have all these guns. We didn't have all these people to start killing one another. So people that die from the gun must die from the gun. I have a gentleman, I can't call him a friend yet, Keek the Sneak, which some of you gentlemen have heard of. He got shot 8 times. He didn't die. When God says it's time to go, it's time to go. So if it wasn't all these guns and we only had a bunch of rocks, you'd be seeing rocks flying all over the damn place. Or like Jesus told the disciples to get rid of all the stuff and go get some swords. He didn't expect them to kill nobody with the swords or to cut that man's ear off. So we got to look at certain things of where life has evolved to go from the gun to the cannon to a missile to bombs to everything. We cannot stop world problem. We cannot stop all the hood problem. There's a gentleman that was above my office by the name of Nigel Collins. You can probably Google him. You thought he was somebody famous. He seen I didn't know who he was until he broke it down. He started the Bloods in the 70s, 78, 79 up in there. And he said he never had to fight nobody in his life, never had to shoot nobody because he was a leader. So the leader gets to point all these people that got a gun or got some chains or had some rocks back in the day. Go way, way back. Because man just gets to keep life evolving. If we never had no death, think about how many people would be on this planet. And gunshots is a big majority of the death. So that means what? Everybody got to start getting run over. Everybody got to start getting caught on fire. Everybody got to get something happen to them other than a gunshot. So I don't say guns are bad. It's just in the hands of man that has to kill somebody with it. Most people that are killers, I mean, I know some. Trust me, I know some personally. And they don't just go around wanting to kill nobody. They're trying to defend their home and all this other stuff. So it's just a lot of stupidity once again in the world to where we live in, we're stuck in. And how we really, honestly, if you think about it, deeply, as hard as you want to think about it, how you going to stop some gun violence? How you going to stop the gangs? How you going to stop these kids from doing what they're doing? It's just nearly impossible. We keep fighting to win, you know.
Well,
we can keep talking to people about
it.
Yes, you may.
If I may interject, this is the whole purpose of speaking about it, to try and curve it.
I said that at the end. All we can do is try and encourage. See? But you ain't going to make them like the police was trying to give them everybody to give up guns.
Well,
weakening our community. I mean, we just, you got to intercede, and I wasn't finished. Go ahead.
I'm going to let you finish. Go ahead.
Once we take all the guns out of the community, okay, I just keep posting up all these different old movies that I was watching, okay? Police running in there looking for a gun. They beat up everybody at the house. They shot a couple of dudes because we didn't have no guns to protect ourselves. So, like I say, go way back to the 60s and the 50s when we did not have no rights to no guns, black people specifically. You didn't have no rights, no guns. So they like, oh, we could have had guns. No, you couldn't have. Not even if you wanted to. Your mom and daddy couldn't even handle guns back in the 50s and 40s and 30s. Come on now. Come back with me. So we're looking at today as being 2024. They can make guns at home. You can make guns out of a plastic tube these days. This is something that's got to keep going until God says it's enough. Like Double R, he said in the scripture this morning, speaking on basically just the same thing. Certain things we just got to let God's plans take place. I mean, trust me, as much as I drive a limousine, hopefully going back this week, people get my limousine with guns. Do I worry about them coming to rob me, putting it in the back of my head? Nope. Do I worry about them shooting me in my face? Nope. I walked in the middle of a gunfight before through my ministry praying for somebody, and then they got into an argument right after and went around the corner and started discussing this stuff, and I seen a gun. I parked my limo. I walked right past the dude with the gun because I met him. I'm giving the two fingers, two face-to-face. Hey, you remember me, right? I walk over to the guy that I prayed for. And he shot a bullet over my shoulder. I mean, he literally reached over my shoulder, pow, shot the guy in the leg. 7 bullets went off behind my back. Pow, 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 pow. I grabbed a dude by his skin. I pulled him under the arm of the Motel 6. It's right downtown. I was on Good Day Sacramento. Because I don't worry about that no more. Both of my limos been shot. One in the walk-by, one in the drive-by. And I was sitting in the damn limo when that one happened. I left a bullet in there. You can come take a picture of it if you want. I'll send one to you tomorrow. And I was sitting in it in the Heights. Both of them were shot in the Heights. And everybody said, Rev, you need to stay out of these bad neighborhoods. Like, why am I going to stay out of the bad neighborhoods? I'm going to go to the good neighborhoods of Granite Bay where everybody got more guns than the hood do. See, it's the thing about life to where we got to accept because we stuck in this. They stuck in that. They don't have these kind of conversation all the way up in Granite Bay, Beverly Hills, and all that stuff. They go out target shooting. Blacks on black is what blacks is. If we were still stuck in Africa, you can't say that all blacks would be killing each other through the tribes. We were tribes before gangs. It's just a trilogy of blood that kept going on. Other countries are killing one another right now. They're killing, I mean, right now, not just a war in Russia. Chinese, oops, they just killed some. Oops,
we understand that that's been going on.
Exactly.
Now, can you yield to someone else, please?
Yeah, no, I wasn't the fact to yield, just like you came in before.
Well, no, but we understand that you'll keep going. So we got
amen for you kind of putting me on that blast right
out.
There, young man. I know I'll keep going, blast, sir, but you don't have to put it like that. I got you. God bless you, Mr. Disciple.
Well, it sounds kind of venomous, Rev. I don't get it, man. You advised me to do just what he did, which was just cut you off because you know already that...
Well, Mr. Disciple
now you interrupted,
before,
Rev, you yielded. You yielded, man.
Okay.
You yielded, okay? You yielded. So, you know, the sensitivities, we're just hoping that sooner or later, this will be a breakthrough on that. I guess that's why, you know, nobody intercedes much earlier until we see that it's on. And now we have to do, we have a program and we have other people to participate, Rev, that's all. So I'm just hoping you'll become a little bit more mindful and have a little bit more of an alarm clock going off in your head saying, okay, I'll table that and come back. But to be consistently, you know, running the gamut, you know, that's not fair to other people. And I'm hoping you'll see that, Rev. Go ahead, Mark.
I do, young man.
Oh, no, I just wanted to open it up so in case someone else had something to say.
Well, I do, because what just occurred to me, because Rev, see Rev, you'll turn out some stuff and but only thing about it, and here's the one I want you to factor into it, Rev, that when you turn out a point that deserves, you know, to be shaken down and examined, by the time you through, that point could be forgotten. But I didn't forget what you said about not having a gun during an era where the police had carte blanche to come in. Because they had the gun, they could just come in on you at random and demand stuff from you at random and not have the concern, for the most part, that you're going to be able to retaliate with the same thing that they're bullying you with. And so that's now the fusion now is that the police act like a gang. That's gang violence, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is gang violence, and it is to stoke fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
And to maintain control using that stoked fear and the anticipation of something's going to happen to you if you don't do what I tell you to do. The gang violence now in our community, I think, is more anger-based. And anger is a form of fear.
I just heard a lot with your boy over there. He had the limos over there. At
our
place, yeah.
Oh, shit.
So anger is a form of fear. It's just that it's more prevalent.
That sounds like it was about me. That sounds like they were speaking in the background about me.
Okay, well.
The boy with the limos
heard,
over there.
So.
Yeah, okay,
Rev. So, again, the form of fear, anger, that is prevalent in our community is our concern to address, right? We came to, like you said, we might not be able to control the legislation that keeps the guns in the forefront. We might not be able to do none of that. We might not be able... Pack has been made on the police being having that gangland kind of ideal when they come in our communities and they just randomly do stuff and feel the you know, because my wife tells me this all the time and she's very versed and learned about this. She says that the police don't know the law. Because when you know the law and they stop you, they get insulted because you know it and they don't. All they know is that they have the jurisdiction to stop you, accost you, arrest you, and possibly abuse or kill you if you don't comply to what it is that they're putting down, right? So that fear factor in the gangland approach is what exists, I think, with the police. But what most important for us to understand is that our young people are not often operating with a power structure that's trying to control something as much as it is the anger that they have a tendency to vent. And then here's the deal. When a black person kills a black person, they have this. I watched it the other day. I'm flitting through some channels on my little special TV thing. You know, they got old stuff that they play that they don't play no more. But they had this thing called First 48, right? First 48 is telling us, because most of the homicides that occur in that the programming are like 78% blacks, right? And the First 48 is telling us that after 48 hours, they don't really pay much attention to the case. So the First 48 are very essential for them to gather evidence, put it together, and get somebody. Most of the time, it's either somebody telling on somebody or somebody confessing. But the First 48 is so essential to them because after 48 hours, they don't really pay no much attention to the case when it's black-on-black crime. So that's why I think the anger is vented toward the low-hanging fruit. People, first of all, you only kill people that you're around, right? But then if you have a lot of anger that culminates in you feeling like you want to take the life of somebody that if you get away for 48 hours, you probably won't get caught because they ain't going to investigate it no more. That's where we are. That's what our job is to make that clear to our people that we're being duped into this gunplay process. We're being duped into thinking that we can have the same kind of control with a gun in our community, protecting the turf or protecting the name or a brand or whatever they call that, the signs and all that stuff that you're protecting that. That's just a microcosm to the gunplay and the gangland that's going on around us, that's controlling everything. It's really important for us to keep driving the message that the anger that we are experiencing as a people is working against us.
I say, Brother Marvell, we have Brother Joe on, and we have from the UK, Sir Mike. I'm opening the phone lines, but I'm still working. So, Brother Mike and Brother
Amen.
Joe, introduce yourself and then pass that mic.
Amen.
Good morning. This is OG Joe. I'll talk with you guys in a minute. I see you talking about guns. So I'll wait for a couple of minutes. How you guys doing?
All right. Could be better, too.
Sir Mike, or someone's calling from the 1111111 number, you can introduce yourself. Other than that, Brother Marvell, I'm going to pass the mic again.
Okay. Yeah, so, I reiterate that the core emotion that seems to deter us from thinking clearly and seeing clearly is our anger. Because nothing else drives a shooting in our neighborhood neighborhood. I ain't going to say community because because Brother Tim done already apprised me that we're working toward building communities, but in the neighborhood, nothing seems to be more at the core of someone wanting to seek retribution than anger. So anger is not our friend. Let's work on it. Anger is not our friend. I mean, it might work for some other people, because if some other people get angry and they get together and they go take self, or they go, you know, like in Tulsa, Oklahoma, in 1921 or 22, I think it was, there was a black community. If people are not familiar with it, a well-rounded, I think it was like four city blocks comprised of black people who had gotten together and did that thing about pulling up their bootstraps, right, and built a community. This was a community, a self-sufficient community, right? And some incident occurred where somebody said or thought, or some white woman uttered that a black man had disrespected her or attempted to make an advance or something petty. And the next thing you know, white folks were attacking, killing, and taking everything that was built out of anger. And the anger is one of them other angers is envy. Envy is a form of anger as well. So out of envy, they wanted to not just take what had been built. They wanted to wreak vengeance on those who had built it and use that as an excuse. And they dropped bombs, community, destroyed it out of anger. So anger, for some people, I ain't going to say it works, but I am going to say they do get their point across. Because they'll come in and they'll bring all this, and then all they need to do is tell a lie or throw a little haze, a little shade on the real reason and say what they're driven for. And the next thing you know, they got reinforcements coming from other cities. Coming, okay, well, we'll be down there, buddy. We ain't going to let... Oh, no, you say what they did there, what they do down there? Come on, I'll be right there. I'll be right there. Let me load my shotgun up here. I'll be down there. So that's how they play it. They come in numbers and everybody's armed. Some people may have a success with that kind of stuff. We don't have any success with that. So our anger is the most important thing for us to address, redress, curtail, and control our anger and our yield.
Amen.
You're listening to the Wise Words of One Gone Show on Blog Talk Radio. I want to thank Brother Marvell for speaking as he spoke. Now, I have music in the background because I'm at the Lamont Myers Foundation fundraiser pancake and breakfast here at the Lutheran Church up at 9242 Keeper Boulevard. And the only reason I'm speaking right now is because I'm a victim of a gun violence. I've been shot 5 times by one gun, right? And people always say, well, did they catch the guy? They caught the guy. And what happened? So it's always a question after a question after a question after a question when people ask you about the violence that you may have experienced. And so I've experienced it to the point where I died twice before I even got to the hospital, right? And I just want to thank the Most High for sparing my life so I can do the things that I'm doing. And I'm against gun violence. That's why I have the program Hooked on Fishing, Not on Violence, right? The reason we have the violence part is because at the time that I opened this organization, I was a CIW, crisis intervention worker here in Sacramento, and it was like 20 murders in 2 months. There was a gang war going on. And so my question for today is gang violence any different than gun violence? And so I would say to a degree it is, because just yesterday there was a shooting, or Friday there was a shooting in Colorado. Just Tuesday last week there was another mass shooting. There was a mass shooting at the Kansas City Chiefs celebration. Just a whole bunch of shootings. So, you know, I'm not going to take up too much time because I'm DJing right now, and I know you hear the music behind me, but this topic needs to be talked about, and I wish you guys would share this information. I check on the Facebook page every day, and I post this so you guys can post it out to get more listeners, and only one that really see it, I guess, is Mark. And so I want to thank Mark for spreading the news, because gun violence in America is out of hand. I'm DJ One Gone, and I appreciate the mic at this time. I got someone's raising their hand. I'm going to the person that's raising their hand. You are able to speak. Go ahead and say your name.
Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to address this issue because I think it's one of the most important issues in our cultural and social life in the United States. And whenever I think about matters like this, I like to extrapolate my opinion about it from facts to determine causality, because I think that's the best way to go. Then once you've got that established, then you can figure out what the problem is and how to fix it. The first thing I'd like to say is that I think the distinction, as your program posits, what is the distinction between gang violence and gun violence? I think the distinction is this. I think the term gun violence was created to deflect blame away from where it truly belongs, and that was with the initiator of whatever instrumentality they used to effect the homicide or the violence, and that is the human being that uses it. I think gang violence is a bit more precise in that it identifies organizations that employ violence to further their intentions and their goals. So I think that's the difference between gun violence and gang violence as a definition. But when I look at what causes all, you take all the universal homicides since 1981 in the United States, 100%, let's take 100% of all the homicides in the United States. Approximately 56% of them are suicides. And I think we can safely exclude those from our consideration because it's kind of difficult to stop a person who's intent on suicide from killing himself. So that leaves the other 45 or 44% or so of the homicides. And let's look at what they are. Out of those people, out of those killings, it would appear from the best data I've been able to do in my 23 years of experience as a police officer working in and around the suburbs of Chicago and Cook County, about 31% of homicides are related to gang activities. Non-gang homicides, you got about 8%. And the other 4% or so are unknown, justified homicides, about legally justified homicides, and accidental. So it would appear that if you're going to concentrate on the homicides, you got to concentrate on that area where you can have the most impact. And when you talk about homicides, and I hate to say this, I absolutely hate to say it, but I'm not going to sugarcoat it anymore because I think we've been doing it for far, far too long. When you look at the number of homicides where an offender is identified, arrested, and or prosecuted, the overwhelming number per capita of the murderers identified, specifically identified, are black males between the ages of 15 and 24 with a rate of 207.4 per 100,000 black males in that age category. Nothing even comes close of any other demographic group. It is off the chain, worse exponentially, magnitudinally. and we've got to admit to this and address it. White males in that age range, 15 and 24 per 100,000 white males of 15 and 24, identified homicide offenders, 8.3. I cannot think of a greater contrast. And we got to stop pretending it's not so, or we'll never fix it.
Would you announce yourself, sir, please?
What's that, sir?
You know, you came in quite strongly, just as you didn't identify yourself. We'd like to know who you are.
Oh, I'm sorry. You can call me Sarge.
Okay, Sarge. So you were a police officer. Are you still a police officer?
No longer, sir, and I'm glad I'm not.
Okay.
I'm glad that I served. I think I did some good. I mean, I started out thinking I was going to save the world, and I found out that wasn't true. But I did do some good. I did have some measure of integrity on the job. And I'm satisfied with that, but I'm certainly glad I'm not a police officer anymore. In this environment, it would be impossible for me to be a police officer. I'd either be fired or I'd get in some kind of trouble. I could not
do it. How long were you?
23 years, and I retired in 2004.
23 years. Yes, sir. Okay.
And
well,
I retired in 2004.
We appreciate you. See, with you announcing your integrity, which we all trust, you help keep some sort of balance in an out of control system that you're even acknowledging now. So that was fascinating that you said, even though, did you hear me when I said about the first 48? Were you on when I talked about that?
No, sir, I missed that.
Okay,
you talk about the television program or the reality of what's important to a homicide investigation.
Absolutely. What's important, and see, the import extends beyond to us. I mean, at least well to me, it extends beyond the evidentiary aspect of it, and it extends to what they're declaring that in the first 48 hours of their investigation is so critical that after 48 hours, it's not likely that it's going to be solved. There's a low percentage of solvency to the first 48, so they really rely on the evidence to be so clear, and then a confession or someone who tells and gives irrefutable evidence so that they can charge within those first 48. And that's why I was kind of astonished when you talk about the 24%, you say, of those cases are adjudicated, and black men are found to be guilty of these murders. Is that what I heard you say?
Yes. Where there is an identified offender, whether the case is cleared by adjudication or whether simply a suspect is identified, black males are identified per capita in that age range, 15 to 24, 207.4 per 100,000 black men in the country. Now, from 25 to 34, it's 119.5. Mm. So, you know, what bothers me though is that the homicide clearance rate, where they would have an offender identified, charged, and/or convicted, in Chicago and Cook County, it used to be over 90%. It'd be like 93%, 94%. You almost always had someone they'd have identified. They get them in trial. They either get a plea bargain or they get a conviction. Now, you can question the methods of the judicial system, and that is proper to do. I mean, I don't have any problem with anybody questioning anything they do in the judicial system, because you got to make sure that innocent people are not sentenced for crimes they didn't commit. But I think it's safe to say that even allowing for some improprieties, most of those people adjudicated were guilty. That nowadays the criminal clearance rate in Chicago, I don't believe, is approaching 40%. It is way down. I mean, it's just less than the majority of cases of homicides identified where they used to come up with an offender and have the case cleared. And that's the case
in big cities throughout the nation. It is disturbing. You know, snitches get stitches, I think, has got more traction now than ever before.
Hmm. Okay, so let me urge something. Let me drop something in that has been quite a turnaround, because you talk about men, people of interest being either charged or held for these homicides. Have we factored into it how many people have been found to be erroneously imprisoned with DNA? Because I kind of like observe there's a high ratio, but enough people have been exonerated through DNA in the last like 15 or 20 years because they were erroneously accused, right? So just having a suspect, a black person that's a suspect, it's almost like you can expect, like the woman that ran her kids into the river, killed her kids, she said it's a black dude did it. So the black dude is going to be the go-to for any kind of underhanded behavior that you try to get up out from under. You say it's a black dude, and that's pretty much what has been happening with a lot of brothers, right? So I just want to factor that into it, too.
Well, yes, I can't precisely answer your question, but I am familiar with the work of the Innocence Project. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's a private organization that works to examine cases and exonerate people where DNA evidence is involved. My understanding is that as of about 2021 or 2023, they had about 375 DNA exonerations, which would result in somewhere in the neighborhood of 15% or so of exonerations that are made as a result of reanalysis of DNA evidence. So I can't precisely answer your question as to what the total amount of exonerations is with regard to any other factors, but that gives you an idea, and obviously that isn't that many exonerations, although I'm not downplaying it, because anytime you can find a guilty man, a man has been convicted, and it finds he was wrongfully convicted, that is a great thing to have him exonerated. But again, the number of exonerations based on that isn't that high. There have been other reversals due to prosecutorial misconduct or some sort of procedural error or a legal constitutional issue, and I still don't think those numbers are very high either. But I can't give you a precise answer to your question.
Well, that was a good on the street, we on the right street answer, because we're looking at it from a perspective of how we are targeted generally, but specifically what urges us to target each other. And I contend that is anger, and I say that anger is not our friend. I say that the best thing that we can do is to bring to the forefront how anger is an energy that is so accessible to our people that it leaves us in an unpredictable kind of mindset. So I say that it's important for us to recognize that anger management and learning how to resurge the energy of our anger and make it not anger uncontrolled, but make it righteous indignation that is structured to move something from where it is to where we want it to be is our quest here on this program, what we attempt to do.
Well, right? I understand, sir. I think when you say things like that, sir, I think you're getting more closer to the nub of the problem. Now, here's my experience with homicide offenders and talking to other police officers and looking at case histories, I don't know, for decades. Most every homicide offender that is charged with a homicide, not always, but overwhelming majority of the time, they have got extensive criminal backgrounds, extensive. two, three, four, five, six-page rap sheets. They lack impulse control. They are not typical people. Most people, 80% of people in the United States, not even black people, don't have anywhere near a criminal record of any type. That's most black people and certainly most white people and others. So white homicide offenders are the same way. White homicide offenders have got multiple rap pages before they commit a homicide or other types of crimes. So the people who commit homicide, by and large, are not your typical people. Many of them simply lack impulse control. And when you ally that to organization or involvement in a gang, you got trouble. I don't think there's any more such a thing as gun violence than there was automobile violence when Daryl Brooks in Waukesha, Wisconsin, ran over them 26 people. I think it was a man who was murderous and lacked impulse control. And it's the same thing with most of these people out here who do these killings. Allowing for the fact that a certain number of them are cold-blooded, rational killers who kill for rational reasons, like monetary gain or some way to seek advancement in an organization or because they've been ordered to do it. But I think most of them are just they look like impulse control, and they kill on impulse.
Hey, can y'all mute your mic? Mute your mic.
Yeah, just hold on, Sarge. We have this little snafu every now and then. You know, folks get excited about the telecast broadcast and forget that they have background stuff going on. But anyway, yeah, okay. So I'm glad you mentioned the monetary aspect of it, because I'm aware that there are member of the species who will kill their parents for money. Right? That's not common among us, right? That's not a commonality in our group, but there are folks, members of the human species, who are ruthless enough to kill their parents and their wives and their husbands for money. So that kind of gunplay, you know, and then it's not always gunplay. It could be poison. You know, and other methods, but for the most part, we have that contingency of greed that motivates a lot of people. The reason why I'm bringing these distinctions, because it keeps arriving back at what our mainstay nemesis is our own anger and seemingly our unwillingness or the lack of consciousness about how devastating our anger is to us, especially in this country. So, yes, sir.
I think that has a great deal to do with it. And I'm telling you, look, if you ask me, sorry, you make me either king for a day, or make me a magician with a magic wand. I can wave my magic wand and create the one sociological problem or pathology in the black community that I think is more important than any other to greatly ameliorating and relieving this problem. If you ask me what it is, this is what I would do. It wouldn't be reparations. It wouldn't be more black politicians. It wouldn't be more black schools. It wouldn't be anything. It would be restoring the black father to his pride, place of primacy in his family, to be involved in raising his children. I think black fathers are not optional. They are essential. When I was growing up, my role models were the black fathers of my friends. They disciplined me. They taught me. They gave me affection. We did things with them together, and they were the role models of my life. That was the one thing I would do over and above everything else, and I believe that would have the biggest impact to solving a great deal of this problem.
Okay, so sorry, if I can ask you one question. I enjoy this here with him, and we're talking about gun violence. I just want to get back to what we said about the gun law. I mean, not the gun laws, but as far as the difference from gang violence is different from regular violence that people use with the guns. My thing that they're both the same. I mean, gang violence still is gun violence because of, I mean, you still got gangs inside of policing. Now, this is the question I want to hit you with, Sarge. Sarge, don't you think that the policing is directed to give us these crimes and give us these strikes or whatever, so we can't vote, so we can't get a gun, so we can't get a better job, and just to keep us down inside of our, not saying community, but our neighborhood? And I can give you a specific reason that I think that the policing is very much so against us getting ahead, because I'm from South Central Los Angeles. When we had the truce, when the Rodney King went on, we had a truce for 3 months. It was the most beautiful thing. But what they did was the policing, they took their undercover black police officers, put them in a car that they was about to tow from a gang member, and came to our neighborhood and shot me with a 12-gauge shotgun with butts in it. You know what I'm saying? To start the truce, to end the truce and to get the gangs back going. So I think that it's like a no winning situation with us in our so-called communities, because then they also drop guns inside of our community. So therefore, and then you said something about reparations. You said that that is not the answer. I disagree, because you think about it. Reparations is this, that it's for us, like the Native Americans, to have our own sovereign society so we can get away from the trap that we have out here in these so-called communities, so we can restore our own youth and older people, because we're not getting anywhere. Just like when I was with the reparation meeting, that the president, Camilla Moore, wanted to say that we're giving, even though we had a criminal record, we're wiping away criminal records so they can vote. I said, well, what about getting our guns back? You know what I'm saying? Because we was bamboozled to have that strike on us so we couldn't get nothing to protect our family. There's a difference between getting murdered and getting killed. It says thou shalt not murder, but in Ecclesiastes it says the time to kill. This is Double R. I yield back, and I'll mute my mic. To you, Sarge.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate what you said, because, look, you, first of all, when you raise issues of police corruption, it is essential to root out corrupt cops and cops that do the kind of things that you describe. I'm very familiar with the rampant scandal in Los Angeles. I'm very familiar with the 77 precinct scandal in New York. I'm very familiar with the Somerville scandal in Chicago, Shakespeare District scandal, Commander Burge in Chicago, all of those things. It is essential. Police, look, the police are your police. You pay their taxes, the suburban taxes to support them. You are the people. Your community is supposed to determine the people who appoint these people to these positions of leadership in the police department and make them hew to the law and apply the law as the Constitution and the laws of the state in which they are located require them to do. That is essential. I'm not arguing with that for a microsecond. What I am taking exception to is the notion that it is believed to be the rule rather than the exception. That's what I have a problem with. It's like what happened with Mike Brown and Darren Wilson. Officer Darren Wilson killed Mike Brown. It's like what happened with, to a lesser extent, even though George Zimmerman wasn't a police officer, what happened in Trayvon Martin's case. All of these cases around here where, you know, hands up, don't shoot, that sort of thing, that none of that was true that they said. And that's what leads to the unnecessary divisiveness. But as you point out, it is absolutely crucial. It must be done to root out these corrupt cops and these prosecutors who will not go after corrupt cops and those who give a bad name to law enforcement. So it's a balancing act. You got to do both. You got to get rid of the corruption and the murderous cops, and you also at the same time have to give police the benefit of the doubt when the facts and the law support it. Can't be one way or the other.
So what about the reparation statement that you made, that you don't think that that's the answer, when you said that we need to put the black fathers and get them right, which is, I agree, but don't you think that if he didn't have all the stress of being low, high in all the negative numbers, we're first, second, and third in strikes, we're leading in that, we're genociding in jail, we get the first offenses, we get life, you know what I'm saying? So what do you think about reparations, us removing ourselves from these so-called communities where that is? So why do you think that reparations would not be, I guess, a way out of this? I yield back.
Well, here's the problem with this, and I don't know how much time you want to devote to this because, you know, I know the issue is gun and gang violence, but I'll be happy to devote as much time as you will allow me to my response for it, and that's this. And mostly every single proposal I've seen with regard to reparations, with some exceptions, and those exceptions I might be willing to support, they're simply unconstitutional. Number one, there is no case for reparations for slavery. There is a case for some form of reparations for individuals who can bring a particularized case of discrimination before the court for the individual. There is no provision in the Constitution for a blanket endowment for any racial group. It is unconstitutional. Even if it was a good idea, which I don't think it is, it's unconstitutional. Now, if we're going to we'll look to the Constitution to get remedies, we can't say, well, we got a remedy that's patently unconstitutional, but we want it because we think we deserve it. It's just that simple. Someone got reparations. I didn't hear exactly what was said.
Native Americans are getting reparations. Obama extended the 100 years of their thing when he was in, extended it after the Native Americans are getting reparations. The Asians got reparations for their stuff. So reparations is in there, and it is for a race. That's why we have to be 1619. Our forefathers or whatever have to be from slaves, and it is slavery. That's what we're fighting for now with this California reparations movement. We're getting reparations for 1619 slavery.
Well, here's the problem. Here's the problem with what you just said with regard to Asians. If you mean the Japanese who were victims of the unconstitutional executive order by President Roosevelt in 1942, relegating them to prisoner war camps without due process of law under the 14th and 5th Amendment, then that clearly was a case of unconstitutional discrimination against United States citizens. They were blanket hauled off into internment camps with no due process, no trial, simply interned for being Japanese, even though they were United States citizens. And every one of them who got the reparations was either the individual or the heir of the person. If they died before the reparations case was assigned, their heirs were given the reparations. So it wasn't a blanket case of pardon, because you got to remember, there were all kind of Issei and Nisei, that's first and second generation Japanese, who lived in Hawaiian Islands who were not interned. They didn't get any reparations. Only the ones actually interned, specifically had their individual rights violated, they got the reparations. In the case of Indians, American Indians, they were dealt with as foreign nations. Now, I know they talk about the United States broke the treaties and all that, and in many cases they did, but nonetheless, they had treaties that were ratified by the United States Senate, and they were treated as foreigners, like foreign nations. Indians who were not subject to tribal jurisdiction were not considered United States citizens, or rather, I'm sorry, let me take that back. Individuals who were subject to tribal jurisdiction were not even citizens of the United States until 1924. So you see, they were treated as nations, and what was given to them as a result of treaty with the reservations and all of that. So again, enslaved were not citizens. You can't enslave a citizen. Even before the 14th Amendment, you couldn't enslave a citizen. They weren't citizens. They didn't have any rights to take away from them for. And you can't retroactively apply laws to things that happened in the 19th century and the law didn't even exist. That's forbidden by the Constitution, too. So I'm simply saying,
well,
there's no case for reparations for slavery. I think there is a case for discrimination in violation of the 14th Amendment for United States citizens who are illegally discriminated against, but those cases have to be brought in an individual manner with an individual claim. They can't be given as a blanket condition.
Wow.
That's a rather intense perspective, given the fact that you sound like a constitutionalist. However, I hope you'll remember that we were not factored into the writing and the structure of the Constitution, but we were factored into making the wealth of this country, building the wealth of this country, and making inventions that put this country on the map. So when we say reparations, we're not really saying we want you to repair us. We just want you to honor us with equity, and we will repair ourselves. The Constitution is not our document, and it's not our document to be an expectation that it's going to represent us as we stand today in this country. So the argument about the Constitution is sort of moot to us. What we're looking at is the facts. The fact is that we, through our labor and through our enslavement, created everything that makes this country what it is now. And so all we're saying is, put it right, make it right, because this country won't be the so-called greatest country on earth until it does that.
Well, I would submit to you that from the very beginning of the Constitution in its ratification in 1787, even before they added the Bill of Rights in 1789, that black people were taken into account in the infamous, often maligned, Three-Fifths Clause. And that's right in Article 1, right at Section 2, right at the very beginning of the Constitution. The Three-Fifths Clause includes black people in its consideration. It just doesn't mention them by race. The three-fifths of all other persons to be included for congressional apportionment is a direct reference to slaves. And notice they call them persons. They don't call them slaves. They call them persons.
What about citizenship? That's a factor that you brought to the table, and I'll concur that a citizen cannot be enslaved, right?
True.
Right.
True.
So,
and that's just it. You got to remember what the 14th Amendment did. Prior to the adoption of the 14th Amendment, the way you were a citizen of the United States was if a state accepted you as a citizen under their rules within their state. Once a state designated you a citizen, then by extension, you were automatically a citizen of the United States. What the 14th Amendment did was reverse that. They said all persons who are lawfully born in the United States, by whatever means, they're there lawfully. If you're lawfully born in the United States, as every slave was, they were there lawfully as a slave. Any person born lawfully in the United States is automatically first a citizen of the United States and then a citizen of the state wherein they resided. Now, why did they do that? Because the Confederate states and some of the other states were not going to allow black people, even free black people, to be citizens. So that's how the citizenship thing came about. It reversed the existing order of the manner in which becoming a citizen of the United States was determined.
Okay. So here's the thing that I think that the legality does no justice for. The legality of the Constitution and the citizenry and all of those clauses that suggest that although we were the hub and the force to make things happen in this country, that somehow we're exempt from being beneficiaries of what has occurred in this country. And that's where you're going to get a lot of blowback, is that despite all the legality and the written word and all of that, we still contend that this is something that we have earned and therefore deserve.
And that's where the contingency that we're operating up under. And then we do have an endorsement by, you know, the legislation to go forth with this. So, you know, I hope that not this, in this particular broadcast, I'm hoping that we don't have that many listeners as we usually do, because you're a very versed and learned individual, and for some time personality overrules principle, and people might start thinking that we don't deserve it because Sarge made an argument against it, and I'm hoping that...
Wait a minute. I want, before you go any further, I want you to understand, I'm not categorically against reparations. I'm categorically against reparations from the American taxpayer's pocket. Now, if you can guilt trip some of these crazy white people out here, especially these liberals, into giving up their money by whatever means, voluntarily, I got no problem with it whatsoever. In fact, I wish you all the luck in the world. I'm simply saying, if you want to get it from the taxpayers, I don't think there's any case for reparations for slavery. There is a case for illegal discrimination against individuals. Now, if there's some way to set up a fund for people to be able to bring cases before proper courts to prove the case and they get their individually owed reparations, then, yeah, I would be for that. But, again, from the taxpayers' pocket, no.
Okay,
it don't
so you're okay
where
with...
come from, Sarge. It don't matter where the money come from. It ain't got to come from taxes. Wherever it come from, they got to give it to us. Why are you concerned about a taxpayer money when they got money that's way higher than taxpaying money? And we're talking about the gold, the cotton, the lumber, everything, the sugar canes, the sugar that they gained in this country. The taxpayer's money is just a tip off the iceberg, brother. I yield back.
Well, I understand what you're saying. I mean, I get this. I get this sense of outrage about the injustices done to our ancestors. I understand that completely. But remember, you're going to be taking this into a court of law. See, that's the problem. That's why I keep saying what's wrong with this. If you're going to try to do it legally, you don't have much of a case. That's why I say, look, if you're going to make a case about moral outrage and you want to get to someone's sense of guilt about things they had nothing to do with, which is another reason why I kind of object to it. You cannot have blood attainders where you apply guilt retroactively to someone who wasn't even alive when the atrocities occurred. I object to that completely and absolutely. That's my principle. I think that is wrong. But again, if you can get people to give up voluntarily their money, hey, that's fine. You make your argument, you make a moral claim, you get the outrage gemmed up, and you say, hey, you know what, don't you think it'd be good, don't you think it'd be fitting and proper that you give something for the suffering of people now long dead, and even if I am maybe improperly expropriating their suffering as though it was mine, still, let's do it just for the sake of goodwill. Okay, I can see you getting along with that. Great, I ain't got no objection. People got the right to spend their money any way they want to. But as a matter of principle, since I do believe I am principled, I have to object to a blanket gift of reparations or bequeathment or whatever you want to call it to black people on the basis of slavery. There's no case there. On the basis of discrimination, there is a case there. That even could be paid with public money. You know, to get the case in the court and get it done, because that's illegal, that's unconstitutional. You're not supposed to be discriminated against after the 14th Amendment. But the point of the matter is that that's not what they want to do. They want to go all the way back to 16. Look, I'm going to have to hold the United States as long for anything before 16. Nothing. That was Britain. It was the British colony. The British were responsible for administering the colonies. They're responsible for everything for July 4, 1776. The United States is responsible for everything afterwards. So that's when I'm going to start holding the United States accountable.
Okay, so Sarge, so you're concerned about the taxpayer dollar being doled out to this cause that we feel that is an entitlement. What is your position about doling out billions of dollars to another country to protect their democracy?
I'm 1,000% opposed to the budgetary allotment for Ukraine, First of all, they're losing the war. They're being defeated. They're being ground down in the dust by the Russian steamroller. This war is a loser. And we've got millions of illegal aliens pouring across our southern border who are utterly unvetted, who have hearing dates for asylum claims 8 and 11 years hence. Everything that's being done on the border now is illegal. I don't believe that the borders of Ukraine are supposed to be more sacrosanct than the borders of the United States. I'm 1,000% opposed to all of this. And by the way, when it comes to Israel, now, unfortunately or not, whether you think it's a good idea or not, in 1978, Jimmy Carter negotiated the Camp David Accords with Egypt. And Egypt and Israel agreed to sign essentially an armistice, provided they both live by the agreement. And in view of that, the Senate ratified that treaty that Carter negotiated, which agrees to pay both Egypt and Israel a yearly stipend by treaty. A yearly stipend if they both hold to the accords at Camp David. And by the way, they both sides have religiously adhered to it ever since. So that's the only money they should be giving to Israel. I don't agree with giving them money for their current war. I understand why they're fighting it. I think they have a right to do what they're doing. But we don't need to give them any more money. If they want to buy weapons from us, let them pay like they do everything else. But right now they're getting enough money from the United States by treaty, so we shouldn't have to give them any more. And if any entity in the United States should give reparations to black people over and above every single other one, it is the Democrat Party of the United States. They were the party of slavery. They were the party of Jim Crow. They were the party of black codes. They were the party of Ku Klux Klan. They were the party of every discrimination, officially codified discriminatory act in the South against black people from the end of the Civil War right through the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. So if any public entity ought to give black people reparations, it's the Democrat Party.
Well, you're talking about if they are in government, right? The party that controls the government. So it's still going to come from the government, which is, the government is funded by taxpayer dollars. So it rounds back still to the fact that whatever is going to be awarded to us is going to have to come from the government. It's not going to come from the private sector for the most part. You may have some donations, but the true responsibility to fight this still lands in the laps of a government that's giving billions of dollars to other countries across the globe and across the water to support their fight against a so-called nemesis of the United States. There's no guarantee of anything except the innuendo that if Russia takes over Ukraine, then they're going to go into Poland and all of that old junk. That's speculation. But that speculation is strong enough for the United States to justify sending money out of this country instead of supporting and making right for the people who built this country. Explain that to me.
Well, I'm with you on that one. We don't have an argument there. I'm totally opposed to giving this money to Ukraine. It's the prop size. They're pouring money down a rat hole. Ukraine is going to be defeated.
You say you're opposed to Ukraine, but they've given money and I haven't heard any outcry from anybody. I'm not going to say you.
Let me take that back. That's not true. Many Republicans are opposed to it, not enough, because right now Mitch McConnell and Republicans in the Senate are trying to get this damn thing through, just like they that hideous border bill that went down in flames. They tried to attach a rider to it of $90 billion in aid to Ukraine, thinking that Republicans would fall for the little trick with the border bill, which was also horrifically bad. So, I kind of agree with you on the fact that we do have entities in the government that want to give all this money to Ukraine, even though the American people don't want to do it. I hope they pay for it in the polls come this November, because American people don't want to pay this money to Ukraine for the most part. We don't want it.
Hey,
they are just enforcing it on us. So I want to secure my border, not the Ukrainian border. That's what I want to secure.
Okay, so I'm just curious about your border concern, because you know what the contingency is here. I think they estimate that in by 2040, there will be a white minority. I think that's the basis for all this concern about the brown surge, because check the record. The people who are finding their way into this country have been assets to this country. The people who are, they're paying taxes and they're bolstering the economy and they're doing work that a lot of people don't want to do. And there's a low crime ratio to report. They try to say that the fentanyl comes from that country or come from the border, but if it does, it's because people are going across the border from the United States and bringing it back. It's not people smuggling it in like they contend. So it's sort of like a Republican talking point to me about the border as being the most important concern, when we're also looking at the doling out of the money for the Ukraine. We're also looking at what's happening in Iran. And we, if you don't look closely, you won't see none of that. All you see is the border concern, and the border concern is really not dire.
Well, sir, I'll tell you, here's what I think the game is. I'm looking at this, and you listen to the remarks of some of the Democrat leadership, it all makes sense. You know how many people left California in the last 2.5 years? 3 million. They have a net loss in population of 3 million. Now, what does that translate to? That means redistricting. That means they're going to have fewer members of the House of Representatives. They're always going to have two senators because every state gets two senators. But you get apportioned members of the House of Representatives on the basis of apportionment. So they got fewer people to have representatives for. That means fewer electoral votes, because the number of electoral votes gets is the number of members of the House of Representatives plus the senators, and that's how each state is determined to get electoral votes. What the Democrat Party is doing is they are taking there saying to themselves, we need to import illegals into the states because the census requires that they be counted. Remember the three-fifths provision? The three-fifths provision applies to illegals too. They got to be counted. And what happens is when you count all of these illegal aliens, you make up for all the people you're losing, and you get more electoral votes. I think the scheme is to flood the country with illegal aliens so they will get their thinking long-term. They want to get more electoral votes so they could control every national election in the future. That's the reason for the madcap lunatic importation of illegal aliens into the country. Now, the Republicans who are for this, and that's admittedly a much smaller percentage of Republicans than Democrats, they want cheap labor. They want labor to work the fields and pick the cotton. And by the way, the Democrats out loud say that's what they want, too. I saw Gerald Nadler get up and say, we need a new class of serfs and slaves to pick our cotton and do our domestic chores. That's what he literally said in the well of the House of Representatives. I don't think we should be in favor of enslaving a new group of people, to say nothing of the slave, human trafficking, and sex slavery that's going on the southern border now. It is horrific. 1,600 people have died trying to make the transit into the United States. Just died from environmental reasons, from drug gangs, women raped to death, all kinds of things. I mean, right, this is not right. This is inhumane. This is an atrocity. This is a human rights violation, what's going on the southern border.
Well, we get human rights right here in the United States ourselves. That's why blacks been fighting for reparations. Now, let me ask you one question, Sarge. First of all, are you Democrat? Well, I know you're not Democrat, so are you Republican?
I used to be, but no longer. They discuss me, too, but just far less than the Democrats do.
Next question.
But I will say this for the Republican Party. The Republican Party was founded out of the Whig Party in order, has its primary goal and mission in its form, to resist and oppose the expansion of slavery into the newly formed territories and then ultimately abolition. That was the reason the Republican Party came into being. Every single party platform the Democratic Party espoused from Andrew Jackson on through to the Civil War and even beyond with Jim Crow and discrimination, events support for slavery. That is the distinction in their founding.
All right, but my next question is, who would you vote for if it was Trump against Biden?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Trump is a flawed man. I mean, he's a flawed man. He's not perfect. his record as president, though, was excellent. I would say excellent overall in the aggregate, not in every detail. But I'll tell you this much. King David was an imperfect, flawed human being, too. God made use of him for his purposes. God doesn't necessarily expect perfection because we're human beings and we ain't perfect. But Donald Trump, I believe, is concerned about what is best for the American people and their prospects, for our energy independence, for our freedom from these global oligarchs who want us to eat bugs and run around and not own anything and be happy. By the way, that's in their mission statement. All of these things. I think Donald Trump wants this country to be free from that, be free from the dominance of Red China and foreign trade. He wants us to not be saddled with an inflation rate of 10%, and then when it drops to 6 or 7%, say, see how good that is? Hell, when he was president, he was under 2%. I think Donald Trump, you know, for all of his flaws, and he has them, he is the only option to Joe Biden and his god-awful, hideous, anti-American, grotesque, and bizarre administration.
Wow.
Thank you. Hey, Sarge, no more further questions, Sarge. I yield my time.
Yeah. Pardon me, sir?
Okay, so.
Was that?
Yeah, he said he yield. He'll yield. You've answered the question that he posed, and he's satisfied with his conclusion. So, now back to the initial, because I don't you're in Chicago. I mean you're a policeman in Chicago.
Yeah, I live in Georgia now, and I'm glad I do, because I live in such peace, calm, and by the way, my county is administered by largely black politicians who I don't agree with on every policy detail, but I got to admit they do a pretty good job of governing. They're not crazy. They're rational. The budget is well managed. Our taxes are low. There's no crime hardly. So, look, even Democrats can be sane. But the ones who live in these big cities and elsewhere, they're crazy. There's something wrong with them. I don't know what it is, but they're crazy. I mean, like I said, these black Democrats who govern this little county where I live here in Georgia, they're fine. I got no problem with them.
Amen.
Well, hey, you know, we need to catch up with them sane MAGA folks.
They're out there.
You got
more in common with them than you think.
Because let you tell it, they're the same ones, right?
Look, I guarantee if you get to know them and what they want, I'll bet you, brother, you got more in common with them than you think. I mean, stuff from Joe Biden, the MAGA crowd, you know who thinks are crazy? They think they are designated as terrorists, people who come to PTA meetings and object to their children having their sexual organs mutilated without the parents' consent. They call that being a terrorist.
But they need to leave their guns at the house, though.
I haven't seen any of them come to a meeting with a gun yet. Besides, according to the Supreme Court and the Bruin decision, you have the right to keep and bear arms in common with American traditions when it's time that the Second Amendment was written. So the Bruin decision is pretty much absolute.
See how it rounds back to our original topic matter is that, you know, the hint of a being armed creates a wariness, right? And it's designed to be a form of intimidation, right? So now we have people coming to the poll. I remember when I went to the poll, there was a guy that pulled up in front of the poll, and my wife was terrified. He said it was during the Black Lives Matter movement that was a key thing in the atmosphere. He said something guns matter all over his thing, and he was riding up and down the street, and you could see that he had a shotgun, you know, behind. He was like in a little cab. In his cab in the back, you could see he had a shotgun, and you could just surmise that he was armed to the teeth. And this is a very, very destabilizing and threatening to the people, and that's what I think the design is. So we're back to this this gunplay thing. We're back to the power of one who's carrying a gun over someone who may not be armed, right? Because now you're at the mercy of their next decision. And who wants to be there?
Well, look, sir, I agree with you there. And look, I know that you're familiar with the Deacons for Defense, you know, Robert S. Williams, and, you know, a black man who formed themselves in armed organizations to resist the Ku Klux Klan in the late 50s and early 1960s. And right now I'm reading a book called Klan War, Ulysses S. Grant and the Battle to Save Reconstruction. And it's about how the United States Armed Forces, before the Posse Comitatus Act, and Ulysses Grant went into the South to destroy the Ku Klux Klan, and they were successful. And they enlisted the aid of black, militant black leaders, a gentleman who I never knew about until I read this book, and I wish more people knew about this fine, courageous black man named Wyatt Outlaw, who formed armed groups of black people to resist with arms the Ku Klux Klan and against them. They murdered him because of what he did. But we need to know more about black men like this who understand the necessity of being armed against whatever tyrannical threats come your way. So let's not look, just because we got criminals out here using the Second Amendment, and, you know, and they're not using the Second Amendment because most of them are already forbidden to own firearms by law anyway. They're convicted felons,
right,
and they can't legally own the guns they use illegally anyway. But I'm just saying, people like to say, like to smear the Second Amendment by saying, see, you access the guns means you're going to have murders. No, criminals use guns. Overwhelmingly, people who murder are already prohibited from owning the guns. They simply disregard the law, just like they disregard the law on selling drugs. It's not legal to possess heroin or cocaine, and there's tons of it everywhere, and it's being sold everywhere, and it's totally illegal. Criminals do not obey the law and never will. Citizens deserve the right to be armed in order to ensure the security of a free state. The right of a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms should not be infringed, and I think that's an absolute, and we need to look upon it as an absolute right, just like your right of free speech. There's not a whit of difference as far as I'm concerned for the law.
So, now that you know, you're alluding to the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms, don't you think it's a stretch? Bearing arms means that, because we're going to be technical, bearing arms means that I can openly carry a rifle and usually has a strap over my shoulder so that you can see that I am armed with a rifle, right? Where did the handgun slip in there?
Well, it says arms, and certainly handguns are arms, as is a rifle, as is a knife, as is a sword, as is a bayonet. So actually the term meant to encompass all the ordinary implements of the soldier. That's literally what it meant, the ordinary implements of the soldier. If you look at the history of the Minutemen and the unorganized militias and the organized militia prior to the adoption of the National Guard in 1903. The National Guard did not exist until 1903 when the Dick Act was passed. They were actual state militias throughout the country. And I know this because I was a member of the National Guard for 17 years. I know all about it. When people try to tell me, oh, the militia is the National Guard. No, that's the organized militia of the states. The unorganized militia is whatever the Militia Act of the state says is in the organized militia that is answerable to the governor upon muster from a muster command from the governor of the state. And that's almost every able-bodied citizen capable of bearing arms.
Bearing any kind of arms.
Arms.
That was
just arms,
right?
But they did say... And all the Supreme Court rulings, they mean, when they say arms, they mean generally the implements of the soldier, what a soldier is expected to carry when they go on the battle. Like the Minutemen, when they were called, they had to show up bringing their own bayonet, their own powder, their own shot, and their own musket. That's what they mean.
Right, right.
Well, Sarge,
I think you take
the word militia a little bit too light. If you look at in the United States, we have over 200 white militia groups, a.k.a. KK groups. So are you telling me that any hate crime group has the right to bear arms? Are you back?
Okay, sir. I'm going to explain this very carefully if you'll allow me to, because you raised an excellent question, and it requires a detailed answer. And I'm prepared to offer it because I've been studying this issue for 35 or 40 years. A Second Amendment militia that is, in the words of the Second Amendment, necessary to the security of a free state. That militia. Now, understand, before I say what I'm about to say, the right to keep and bear arms is independent of any other consideration. Why? Because the right to keep and bear arms enables the well-regulated militia that is necessary to the security of a free state. So regardless of any other consideration, you have the right to keep and bear arms. So I want to make that clear before I get started with the next thing. The right to keep and bear arms is not dependent upon your membership in a militia. It precedes that in order to enable the militia. Now, a Second Amendment militia must be answerable to a state governor. See, now you can call yourself anything you want. You got a right, First Amendment right of free association. You're allowed to associate with whomever you want. As I just said, your right to keep and bear arms is independent of any other consideration. You are allowed to train in military target shooting and tactics. Yes, that includes Ku Klux Klansmen. That includes any American citizen in any lawful activity whatsoever. And you can call yourself a militia all day long. You got the right to do that under the First Amendment. But if you're going to be a Second Amendment militia in the meaning of the constitutional sense, you have to be answerable to a governor. You have to operate under the authority of the governor. You can't go out and start setting up DUI roadblocks because we're the militia and the power of the militia rests in the citizenry. No, you got to do that because the governor says, we got an emergency and I need my militia to go over here in the highway, set up roadblocks and check with drunk drivers or something like that. You have to be answerable to a governor. So all these militias, when the governor calls them up, they can offer themselves as a militia company and say, governor, we're responding to your call-up muster. Here we are, the 109th Ku Klux Klan Militia. We're at your service. And the governor can either accept them or reject them as he will.
Wow.
So that's the meaning of the Second Amendment militia. The unorganized militia is the militia I'm referring to, not the organized militia, which is the National Guard when it is in state service. Do not forget. When the President or the Department of Defense federalizes a National Guard unit, it is then just another component of the United States Army. It is no longer part of the state militia.
So in short, they have the right to bear arms. They have the right to associate, congregate, whatever their belief is. And then they also have a right to protest, right?
Of course. Everybody
right.
does.
So and then, so in a state where you can bear arms, they can be walking down the street looking like an army, right?
Yes, they can. So see, all I'm saying, remember, this is my point. My main point is that a Second Amendment militia, in the meaning of the Second Amendment, secures the free state by being ready to serve under the command of the state governor. Okay. And remember, you don't have to be in state militia to have the right to keep and bear arms. That's independent of all other considerations. But the reason they give you the right to keep and bear arms so you're ready to serve in a state militia.
Okay, I can see the right to bear arms.
Wait a minute, I've got a question now. Sarge, I've been listening to you, and a lot of the points that you've made are correct. Sarge, I spent 31 years in department in San Francisco, 21 Department 12 in San Francisco. The right to bear arms. Simple question. Now, I'm certified. I've been stopped twice here in Sacramento, California, simply with my firearm on me. That's it. And I've had to do paperwork, but I've been stopped twice. I don't see that in my counterparts. I see whites who are armed, never stopped. Now, you keep talking about the militia and the right of the governor. Sarge, both of us were trained to, quote, look for the bad person. I'm not a bad person. I'm a retired officer, but yet eyesight and assumptions, I'm considered a bad person. And that's where I think Double R, who's been firing back at you because of the things, and I can understand that you're a conservative. I hear that in you, but this doesn't sound like there's any equal ground.
Well, I understand what you're saying. I mean, look, we're talking about the human heart. We got corruption in the human heart. I mean, you got a rogue law enforcement acting rogue. They are not acting as police officers. I don't know what to tell you. They're not allowed to act that way legally. So whenever they are out themselves and you have an opportunity to do so, you've got to bring it to the attention of the authorities so corrective action can be taken. Look, that's why we have laws, because we know human beings ain't going to behave, even if they wear a badge and have taken an oath of office. I mean, that's the thing. See, this is one the great thing about the framers of the Constitution were. They were Christians. They understood they were sinners. They were original sinners. The human nature was something they understood above everything else, and they understood the corruption inherent in themselves. That's why they set up the Constitution the way they did, because they knew they were sinners. They said the point of the Constitution is to prevent centralization of power. So if you get a corrupt, immoral, power-mad individual in charge, he doesn't have enough authority to just take over everything. That's why we have a system of federalism, to distribute power. That's why we have these local law enforcement agencies. It's not concentrated in one agency. That's why you got, 17,000 local and state law enforcement agencies or so? That's the reason for it, to avoid concentrations of power. And what you're describing is bound by their oath. They're supposed to administer the law equally, fairly, insofar as is humanly possible. Remember, the word I'm using, humanly. We got to keep remembering. You got a lot of flawed human beings out there with badges and authority. But most of them aren't. And I think we should take that into account, too.
Okay. Well,
so, I know what you say goes on. I've seen it myself.
Okay, Sarge. While you're on the oath and the adhering to the oath for a gun-toting person who's not centered as far as humanity is concerned, I hear you say that they're not all like that. However, what we've observed and what's been our experience is that those who are not like that permit those who are with impunity. They don't step up to say, hey, man, hold on. They don't testify against each other. They don't report each other. They sort of like just kind of turn a blind eye to the underhanded behavior of their peers. So that's one of the factors that I think is not being discussed here, is that although I hear that it's the majority of the law enforcement are good and represent that small percentage over causing. It's almost like the Republican Party is a minority, but they act like a majority, right? And they push issues like they're a majority. So this is kind of like the underhanded officers are acting as a majority, but for as far as our optics are concerned, because we don't hear testimony against them, we don't hear complaints filed against them, and we hear the echoing of whatever story they tell to justify their behavior. We hear, the echoing of the same for the peer that knows that they're wrong when they committed it. So that's something that we haven't talked about, and I think it's worth discussing.
Yeah,
the good ones are not giving up the
bad. Remember earlier I cited you those really big police scandals in those big cities like the Rampart scandal, the 77 Precinct scandal, the Somerville and Shakespeare District scandal, the Commander John Byrd scandal, the Miami police scandal in the 80s with the drug dealing and all that other stuff. And those are big, massive scandals that we all got all the attention and all the publicity, and everybody was outraged by it as they should have been and so on. Great. But here's what... The thing you're referring to, though, is far more common and maybe even more insidious. Take a Terry stop. Now, I know the gentleman I just spoke to, he knows what a Terry stop is. Terry versus Ohio, stop and frisk, okay? In Terry vs. Ohio, the rationale for it was a police officer has a right to stop an individual in an area, say, of high crime, where crime has been involved. He observes suspicious behavior, not behavior that would amount to probable cause for an arrest, but behavior which is suspicious and warrants some sort of investigation. And in an area where a police officer is deemed to be likely to be confronted with a threat to his life or health, then he's allowed to make a stop and frisk of the outer clothing for weapons only in order to ensure his safety. Now, that's the constitutional rationale behind Terry versus Ohio on stop and frisk. Okay? Now,
sure.
Police officers abuse that one all the time. I know they do. I know they do. Okay? They don't have a reasonable, articulable suspicion. They just see a black man going down the street or somebody they think, not always black men, but whoever they think is suspicious. And then they just kind of shake him down. And they actually do a search. And the only way you're allowed to do a search is either with a warrant or a search incident to the arrest. Any other search is illegal. Any other search is illegal or under exigent circumstances. Let me forget that one. Let me put that one in there, too.
Or
they don't have any of that.
Permission.
They just do the search.
Or even
now,
even if they
that is the kind of thing.
They give permission, right?
Well, with the permission, too, yeah. But, you know, even a lot of time that's done under duress. See, I'm acknowledging all of the things you say that I know to be true. That is more common than, like, the kind of outrageous things I referred to earlier, like in the L.A. Rampart section, where cops are just acting out-and-out like criminal drug-dealing thugs, all right? And now, it's kind of hard to get a handle on that because it's a very common technique of patrol officers. They do it all the time. I mean, they're not supposed to, but they do it. And what you have to have is a police leadership that just won't allow it because it is a valuable tool where, believe me, I've used it where I legitimately used it, and I caught the guy's gun before he had a chance to use it on me. He fit the description. He was in an area where burglaries were going on, everything else. I kind of recognized him from other incidents, and I did a Terry stop and a pat down and frisk. He had a 25 automatic right there in a pocket in his cargo pant leg. So, you know, I mean, he might, I don't know what he's going to use it on me. I'm going to assume he might have if he had the opportunity. So, but that does no excuse for cops to abuse it. They're supposed to do it within the rules. And the only way you're going to be able to ensure that you do it, you got to elect a mayor or a governor or whoever it is who appoints these people, who's going to appoint a leader with the integrity to ensure that his officers have integrity. The leadership sets the tone. Don't just elect somebody to office simply because you're politically aligned, whatever you think they're going to give you. Somebody who is likely to pick leaders with integrity and fidelity to the law and the Constitution, and that sort of thing will never be eliminated, by the way, but it will at the very least be minimized.
So, okay, it is the wise words one gone show. We're going to take a commercial break. This topic is real good today. I want to thank everyone that called in on the panel. I'm DJ One Gone on the Wise Words One Gone show, and we'll take a pause for the calls, which is our commercial for today.
Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence presents Youth Healing Circle every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m.
Youth Healing Together.
2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California. Inside of Room 67, our Youth Healing Circle is a forum where we dive into discussions about drugs, bullying, school, and life skills. We provide a safe space and inform our youth
that sometimes it is okay to not be okay.
During our Youth Healing Circle, our youth may hear from other youth as well as experienced adults how to problem solve and navigate unforeseen complexities that we all run into in life. 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California. That's Room 67 every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. For more information, text or call 916-889-0105. Let's heal together. Peace. and Blessings King, Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence presents
the Men's Healing Circle.
Brothers Healing Together.
Brothers Healing Together.
Join us every Wednesday night from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California, inside the Obama Room. The Men's Healing Circle is a place where men uplift, encourage, and inspire each other to be better through personal testimony, dialogue, self-reflection, self-improvement, and positive affirmation. Again, that's 2251 Florin Road, Sacramento, California, in the Obama Room. Come out and pledge to greatness with your fellow brother.
Hey, man, you got your fishing pole?
Got my fishing pole?
Yeah, man, we going fishing.
Man, I ain't going no fishing, man. I got this strap. These streets is hot.
Hey, man, you need to call Hooked on Fishing, Not on Violence at 916-889-0105.
Hooked on Fishing, Not on Violence. It's brought to you by Wise Words with One Gon' Show, and we can work it out in. Hooked on Fishing and Not on Violence. It's taking the guns out of our kids' hands and putting a rod and reel in them. We are located at 2251 Florin Road in South Sacramento. That's Hooked on Fishing, Not on Violence. Join the crew and save a kid. You know how we do.
Right on, right on, right on. So, in the announcement in our commercial, the young man said, fishing, I got to be strapped out in these streets because these streets are hard, it's hard out here. So I got to stay strapped, right? And that strapping is aligned with strangely aligned with the Constitution declaration that you could be strapped, right? But it seemed like the being strapped is necessary for a cause and not just because. So now we're talking about folk that have something that can take a life and comfortable carrying it around. And the human element kicks in because Sarge mentioned it earlier. You're still human beings. So now I'm a human being walking around with a weapon of devastation and potential fatality. And now I'm subject to my next bad emotion or next bad decision. And someone else is susceptible to my next decision as well. And that's a travesty for us. I'm not talking about nobody else. I'm talking about us. We are a unique form of species in this sphere and in this realm. And there's certain things that we deserve to have undertow and clearly understood about each other and about our group that will keep us safe mentally and spiritually and emotionally so that we won't keep on digging holes for ourselves and keep on creating situations where we justify devastation to our own people. So that's the overall of this one of the overalls of this conversation is that although all those things exist in the Constitution made by white folks who, quite frankly, you said they were Christian, Sarge, but many of them were atheists and many of them were not Christian. They were just landowners who were protecting their interests. So bottom line for us, when we talk, we got to be exempt from all of those externals that dictate how things go with others and look at specifically what's pertinent to us and how do we grow and thrive under the circumstance. So really appreciate, Sarge, you. I'm going to tell you something. I hope you come. I hope you stay on board. I hope you don't just make this a one-off. I hope you'll stay on board.
Hey, look here, brother. I got to tell you, man. I've been pleasantly surprised by the civil nature of our conversation, even as we disagree. When I come on some of these shows and I talk, sometimes I get hostile like you wouldn't believe. I get personal assaults like you wouldn't believe. I mean, it's not on the merits of what I say. You respond to what I say as I respond to what you say. We disagree civilly. I think we got good points across on both sides, and I think that's what the purpose of conversation is all about. And if this is the way you are on this show, sir, you can count on me calling back in.
There we go. Today is too short. Too short, Chuck. We need to have a day two with you on here, man. I appreciate you, man. This is Double R again, man. I appreciate you. You got wisdom. And I wish you come back tomorrow because we're about to cut it off. We only got 2 hours. I yield back.
Yeah. If I can be in any way helpful to people's understanding, that's what I'd like to do because I spent a lifetime learning. I mean, my formal education is not much. I got a high school GED. Then I went to City College for about 4 months, and I dropped out, and I'm an autodidact. Everything else I've learned through study and on-the-job training as a police officer, as a soldier, and as a combat veteran, and that's been the best education of my life.
I'd like to say this to you from one officer to another and also from one veteran to another. I too, like Double R said to you, would love to have you back. I'm glad to hear you this morning. You touched on a topic that we've been wrestling with, and that is the black father back at home. So when you
Amen.
Come back, let's kick that.
Yes, sir.
Amen.
Yeah. Yes,
like
sir.
I said,
yes,
all the black fathers I knew, I love most of them, especially my own, and all the others are pretty decent to me too. I learned a lot from them. I just cannot fathom how it came that one of the most essential elements in my life as a young man is no longer predominant in the great majority, the overwhelming majority of black homes today. It is simply unthinkable to me this could ever come to this pass.
Well,
we
now, could you
we get on fentanyl.
Could you fathom, Sarge, that it's systematic?
Yes,
could you fathom
I can.
That?
Yes, I can.
All right,
I'd be happy to talk about that.
That'll be the basis of launching another discussion about just that issue. Is that and if it's systematic, that means it's deliberate. Do you agree with that?
To a great extent, yes.
Okay, so as long as we're in accordance with that, we can operate from there, and then maybe we can bring something to you. That, you know, because you say you scratching your head. You don't seem like a man that scratches head too much about stuff because you seem to be versed, knowledgeable, and studied and do your research. But you scratching your head about this. Maybe we can help you curtail that itch in the future when we talk about this because we have to recognize, as we do with the police system, that there is a culture and there is a design that has perpetuated itself so much that it's very clear that it's deliberate, right?
Well,
that's what we're operating with.
I'd like to kind of sum up my feelings about this in one sentence here. The architects of this baleful situation have created it by actually taking into account a very important part of our being. That's human nature. Human beings respond to incentives and disincentives. That's part of human nature. And these people took advantage of it to our eternal sorrow.
Right on. Right on. So now we're operating in the comfort zone, and we can launch from there because we really attempt to come up with stimulating solutions in the minds of the people who are listening, right? We have more listeners than we have talkers. People, we have thousands of people listening, right? And so we want to stimulate them to do a more in-depth thought process about the issues that we're talking about, and we can certainly benefit from having your contribution in the future, Sarge. So thank you very much for coming in and for this, what you shared. And, of course, I'm going to give thanks to our regular participants in the discourse, because if without that regularity, I think that we won't be able to have the different perspectives that a touch on as many areas in the minds of the many people and the way they look at things, and maybe we can collectively come to a conclusion about how we're going to work together to make things right for us in this country. So thank you very much, everybody, and we look forward to speaking with you tomorrow, and God bless all.
9 o'clock.
This is Larry.
Thank you for your civility and your gentlemanly nature. I really appreciate it.
We want you early.
So, Larry, you try to come here later? Larry. Don't come up. Be here tomorrow, Larry.
Roger.
Right on. All right, folks. We're about signing off.
Y'all have a good one.
Have a good day.
Peace out.